It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, so hey everybody, welcome to episode 247 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Hello.
And we also have Drew Freeman in sunny Ajax, Ontario.
On the lake. Ajax on the lake, oh, Ontario.
On the
I'm only
lake.
About half an hour away from you today.
But yeah.
Is it actually sunny there today?
It was. It was actually really quite nice out.
Yeah, because it's pouring here. It's pouring rain.
Yeah, we had rain around 5 today, just after I got 5:30, I guess, after I got off the streetcar. The last bit of my trek was in the rain. It was nice, though, because it's warm, you know, for us. It wasn't really too cold.
So people out there who think in California it's always sunny and warm, you're wrong.
Well, it's like the
song, Bay Area.
It never rains in California, it pours, right?
Yeah, exactly.
As the song said. Right? So does it rain a lot in winter and spring and stuff? Or
here?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on whether we're having a drought or not. So we had a few years there where we had a pretty bad drought where it pretty much never rained. And it was bad, you know, because all the lakes were low and the mountain, you know, ice pack was way down to nothing. So we had no runoff and we had water rationing and all that. But this year, all of a sudden, the drought's over and it's been pouring pretty steadily since, like, I don't know, November. We had a few weeks of respite last few weeks, but now it just started up again out of nowhere. So who knows?
Well, this is the fabled April showers, I guess, or April May showers, I guess.
Yeah, but we usually don't get that here. We usually get rain from like the end of December through early February in a non-drought year. Right. We get a lot of rain, but that's about it. You know, it's once February is over, pretty much it's done. Maybe every once in a while, but not much. But this year, it's been just nuts.
Yeah,
it's the runoff from Canada's winter.
Well, maybe. People are complaining here that our spring is unseasonably cold as well, right?
Yeah. It's all those melting polar ice caps. All the water evaporated, and now it's raining on us.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we were talking last week about this is a bit of a fact check from last week's episode where I mentioned the pictures of Apple Park, the new Apple Park building. That I found some images on my hard drive from like 2011, and I was curious as to were we talking about it back then. We weren't podcasting back then, but was this an issue? And it turns out that on June 7th, 2011, that's when Steve Jobs presented to Cupertino City Council his details of the new design, and that's where those images I got were from, the original, you know, I guess, architectural renderings of what the Apple Park would look like. So yeah,
I don't remember exactly when the construction started, but
2016,
sure.
I think. Yeah.
Oh, 2016. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. I was going to say I'm pretty sure it was much later than 2011.
Yeah, because you and I were looking at it, and I was there in February of 2017, and they were just putting trees in and stuff, right?
So, yeah, but they had been building the building for a while before then.
Yeah, there were. If you look on the wiki Wikipedia page, just pictures from, you know, of the concrete foundations going in and all that kind of stuff, right?
So yeah, 2016 sounds about right.
Yeah. It opened the year and a half ago, I think, 2017, just when they started moving to San Jose for WWDC, right?
Well, and another follow-up is that the mysterious rainbow pavilion that we talked about last week is for the official grand opening of Apple Park, which is in a couple of weeks.
Oh, the official grand opening. Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently so.
All right, cool. Good to know. All right. So I got an article here in follow-up, and this follow-up because we always talk about App Store pricing. And this is an interesting little short piece by Becky Hansmeyer, who said she wasn't reading blogs back then, but she found a piece from Dan Barnard from 2008, which is when we were all first start talking about apps. But an interesting bit of advice here on if you have a non-subscription-based app priced under $5, the suggestion is to double that and see what happens. If your app sales don't nosedive, then bump it up again. And, you know, because I think that the race to the bottom, everybody thought they had to get down to 99-cent apps and just live with that. And I know I've tried this with some of my apps, the more successful ones. I doubled the price at one point and it didn't suffer. So I just left it there kind of thing. But just sort of interesting idea on, basically finding that sweet spot for your app. And I saw a talk yesterday by Mark Pavlidis at our Taco group, which is our local meetup, about subscriptions and just to give a bit of a short story. He sort of said the same sort of thing, like when he was asked a question after the talk about how do you determine what your price is, and he sort of said, well, you can set a price and then, see how the sales go and then add it, increase it a bit until you hit a spot where it kind of nosedives, and that's kind of sort of where the happy price for your app is, and do that over, a period of months just to see where things go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. I remember going to a talk at, I think it was Macworld? I don't know. Maybe it wasn't Macworld, but it was right around that same, probably around 2010, where they were giving exactly the same advice. And I think I tried it, and I think it didn't really work.
I
don't remember. Yeah.
Well, that sounds about right, because, I saw some talks, and like I said, I've been going to iOS conferences since 2010, 2011. I remember seeing Andy Anako do a talk on app pricing and getting reviews from the trades. His advice was sort of the same sort of thing. If you're making a Photoshop-style app, charge charge $20-$30 for it, and... Mm-hmm. If you're making a little utility, charge a couple of bucks for it kind of thing, right? And that was long before the race to the bottom. I think it was probably maybe when the race to the bottom was first starting up, right? So mm-hmm. around the time the iPad came out, right?
Yeah, that was around 2010, yeah.
All right, so I don't know if you guys have taken a look at it yet, but the Apple launched the Apple TV app on the iOS devices. So if you put it on my iPad here, looks very similar to the Apple TV app that we have. And the Apple TV app also looks like it's updated as well. Should mention that on the Apple TV device itself. But yeah, the TV app, I'm doing Apple Sign TV app on your iPad or your iOS device, or iPhone, whatever. I mean. What's interesting there is that it includes other apps. Like in Canada, we have Crave, which is our equivalent of HBO. CBS All Access apparently is in there. Showtime, Stars, ESPN for sports, and Amazon Prime Video are all contained within this thing. And if you choose a piece of content, this is where the seamless bit comes in. If you choose a piece of content that you want to watch, and you just have to log into your account for that provider to be able to watch that show, right? So it seems like it's going to be I think we talked about this before, that Apple wants to try and make it easy for everybody. I'm going to hear a note about Apple's the costs are similar, I guess. HBO is $14.99 American per month. Showtime, for instance, is $10.99 a month. And what's interesting and conspicuous is the fact that Netflix is not here. Netflix has said that they won't participate in this Apple TV product. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Netflix in the future as all these other guys sort of jump on the bandwagon with Apple. Mm. What do you guys think?
I wonder if this also means that the Apple TV app for Samsung TVs is available.
It's true. I forgot about that. The smart TVs as well. Not sure if it's all of them, but some select 2018 models, it says here, like they announced at the last presentation.
Yeah. Well, the 2018 models had one of the advanced features, but my understanding was that just the plain old Apple TV app would be available on all Samsung smart TVs, but I could be wrong about that.
It says all 2019 smart TVs and select 2018 models, right? You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Plus Vizio, LG, Sony as well. So you don't even need to have an Apple TV device, right? Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this autumn is when the Apple television streaming service starts, along with Disney streaming service. So between Disney owning that and Hulu and Apple, I think Netflix is actually going to get a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, we were just talking about on Spotcast about how Comcast and HBO have come to an agreement on... Oh, no, sorry. Comcast and Disney have come to an agreement on how to run Hulu now that they own most of it, right? So mm-hmm. I think Comcast owns 33% of it.
Mm-hmm. And I know Disney owns over 50, I think.
Yeah, and they're bringing out an NBC app. No, I think HBO just bought another chunk the other day. AT&T's interest, I think. And Comcast is still coming out with their own app as well, right? Because they own NBC and Universal, right?
Well, everybody on cable wanted a la carte. They got their a la carte.
Yeah, yeah. You mean the people or the providers?
Everybody always said they wanted cable so they could select what stations they wanted. They wanted their a la carte cable, and streaming has definitely given us the choice of saying, I want this station and I want that station.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I still question whether we'll end up spending more money than we had in the past just for straight cable. What's interesting, though, is that, just looking at your notes from last night, what are they? Oh, yes. Mark Perbelis had mentioned that we're living in I think he called it a rental economy these days, where, you know, everything's sort of, you know, you use HBO until Game of Thrones is over, and you cancel your account kind of thing, right? So we all want, you know, food delivered to our door by Uber Eats and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We want that sort of, we don't want to own it, we just want to have it for a short period of time, right?
My entire budget is based on month-to-month costs now.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Oh, if you take a look at just some of the programming on streaming, it's like, you know, I have all of these subscriptions, Netflix and Hulu, etc. Yeah, yeah. So everything budget-wise is just yet another monthly line subscription.
That's what I call death by a thousand cuts.
And it won't be too long, actually, until we have cars will be using that model. I mean, it already is starting with Uber and Lyft, but once we get to the point where all these cars are self-driving, which is not as far away as one might think, then I think that the services like Uber and Lyft and others will start flooding the market, and it just won't make sense to own your own car at that point.
In my neighborhood, we have a lot of Zip cars and Car to Go, and there's a couple of other things where you basically use the car for 2 hours and then you take it back. When I sold my car, that's what I started doing, because they opened a Zip car lot just around the corner from my house, right?
So. Yeah, certainly in urban areas or densely populated suburbs.
Yeah, if you talk about San Francisco, there's no point in owning a car.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
because you have transit all over the place as well, right?
In San Francisco, yeah. I mean, where I am.
Yeah, as long as you don't want to leave San Francisco.
Right. I'm in San Jose, so it's a little bit more of a car-oriented city where I am. But still, you know, there's so many Ubers around, so many Lyfts around, and it's. I think there's going to be an inflection point at some point. People are just going to stop. I mean, I may never buy another car. You know, I'm not going to get rid of the one I have for now, but at some point I will. And, you know, then it's a decision. Do I actually buy a new car, or do I just use these ubiquitous services to drive me around anywhere I want to go?
Well, that's pretty much what I did when I was working independently, you know, because I basically spent, you know, 10, almost 13 years working out of my house, and I would just sit there and watch my little Honda Civic rust on the sidewalk in front of my house, right? And eventually I sold it off to a friend of mine for his nephew, and then I started using Uber. And I was using Uber, like I would get a cab, like a yellow cab, I guess equivalent up here, mm-hmm. And use them, because I really wasn't into the big, you know, people driving me around. I wanted people who are sort of professionals at it. I canceled my Uber account a few years ago when they started being, you know, bad executives and stuff like that. But I want to ask, actually, now that we're talking about Uber for a second, it's not really in our show notes, but so I think last week there was a big protest from the drivers as Uber stock went public.
The day of the IPO, the drivers were on strike, basically saying that they're paid below minimum wage.
And, right.
Yeah, they're not actually employees of Uber. They're all independent contractors, which means they don't get paid health insurance and they don't get paid an hourly wage. They just get paid by trip. Yeah. So out of that, they have to pay all the maintenance for the vehicle. They have to pay for gas. They have to pay for their own health insurance and anything else, self-employment tax, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, who knows what the actual numbers are, but I saw some calculations that were saying it comes out to be something like $7 an hour by the time it's all done, which is, you know, way below minimum wage. If you work for a company, even making minimum wage, they're still going to pay health insurance on top of that. So pay for your health insurance. So it's not a great deal for these drivers. Now you could argue, well, they don't have to do it. You know, they're free to do something else, but you know, it's a tough call.
And those demonstrations, those were for both Uber and Lyft, weren't they?
Possibly the Lyft drivers. Well, you know, pretty much these days, everyone who is an Uber driver is also a Lyft driver, as far as I can tell. It was specifically on the day of the Uber IPO but it certainly could have been protesting Lyft as well at the same time. It just happened to be, you know, the day of the Uber IPO to make most PR impact.
Yeah, and I saw that Uber's stock kind of hit a downturn, but I think that was probably also part of what's happening in the market too, right?
Now, the IPO came out a lot more disappointing than Uber and its executives were hoping for.
Way more so. But it certainly wasn't helped by the market tanking, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Another little piece that we've been talking about. This, I think, can't remember, was it WWDC last year where Adobe did a demonstration of Photoshop on the iPad? You guys remember?
I think it was last year, yeah.
Yeah. So just a little silent, I don't know how quiet it was, but I just found out about it online when I was poking around yesterday, that Adobe has got a page up now where you can sign up to try out the beta of iPad or Photoshop for iPad. And there's a link here in the show notes to that. So I'm looking forward to that. See if I get a chance to try it out. They ask you a few questions as to why you should be considered to be a user. You know, I basically told them I've been using Photoshop since 1.0 and use it all the time. You know, I started using Photoshop on my phone. There's a Photoshop app on my phone from Adobe that's, you know, has layers and filters and things like that. It's pretty, in some ways advanced, but some ways, like, you can do, you know, cropping and stuff like that, close cutting, and what we used to call close cutting, to cut out an image and pop it into another one and do a composition. I did a quick composition with a Starbucks cup, you can imagine why, last week.
Photoshop on a 12.9 inch iPad with pencil could be pretty compelling.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. I've got the other designer, Affinity Designer and Affinity Photo. The other thing too is, I think it's also a learning curve. I think that's supposed to be closer to what we do on the Mac in terms of how we use it. So that should be interesting. I think we're getting fonts in, ability to add fonts in the next iOS 13 as well, which will help, you know, with that for layout and design and things.
I wonder how the Photoshop for iPad will figure into the CC Photoshop world.
Well,
whether or not it's going to be its own standalone application, or whether or not you'll be able to get it for free and authorize it with Adobe CC.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is I know a lot of people like myself, I don't use the Adobe suite enough to warrant my having a subscription for it, which I think is around $40 Canadian for the full suite. It's like $20, I think, a month for Photoshop alone. And again, I don't use it that much. I use it maybe once a week or so. I'm thinking that it'll be definitely part of the Creative Cloud. Currently, all of the apps that they have on iOS are free, but they sync in with the CC products. Like I can do a layout in Photoshop on my device, my iOS device, and then send it to Photoshop on my Mac, right? In theory, because I don't have Adobe CC, I'm still using I forget which one it is, but it's an older version. I don't have that ability, but I found that I can. There's this product called Adobe Creative Cloud, which is like how much space you get, but it's a place where you can do your designs, upload them to the cloud, and then pull them down to your Mac and finish them up as well. But you can only pull them out as JPEGs or PNGs. You can't use them as Photoshop layered files, right?
So Creative Cloud is just sort of another Dropbox, OneDrive, iCloud thing.
Yeah, but it's free. So I mean, you know, I currently don't have a subscription to the Photoshop product. So again, like if I was still in the self-running business and doing, you know, web design and iOS design and that kind of stuff, I could see myself having that. That's another reason why I don't have a Sketch subscription, because I can't justify the payment. You know, I'd rather watch Brave and HBO and Apple Music than that, right? So, yeah, it's not part of my daily activity. So, but I mean, I definitely think that this Photoshop for iPad will become part of Creative Suite. I can't see it being free. I would like it if it was a standalone app, but I have have a feeling it's going to be a subscription model app, and we'll talk about that a little bit later too as well. So that's that. So under our WTFU section this week, WhatsApp, I don't know if you guys have heard about WhatsApp, was targeted by a surveillance attack fairly recently. Have you heard about this one? You did hear? Yes? No?
I did not.
Again, it was another one of these ones where somebody could call your WhatsApp account and start listening in to you without you actually having answered the call. And it kind of went out to a ton of devices out there. And so WhatsApp was frantically trying to tell people to upgrade their devices as of last weekend, I think. They were urging 1.5 billion users to update their apps as a precaution. So WhatsApp's quite popular in Asia, as far as I know. I think it's pretty well, you know, how they communicate down there, right? So out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so another great whoops moment from the folks at Facebook, right? I'll link in the show notes for those of you who want to follow up on it. All right, so I guess over to you, Drew.
So this one's a little bit of a tricky story because I got it from CNN. You have to actually follow. The Supreme Court is allowing iPhone users to sue over the App Store monopoly.
Yeah, yeah.
And this does not say that anybody is suing Apple over the monopoly. What happened is that the Ninth Circuit Court, the federal court, said, we think they should be allowed to sue. Hmm. And then it went to the Supreme Court to try to throw that case out. And the case of the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to throw it out. So that's standing. So as of yet, there is no lawsuit. And anything that would be a suit would still have to be examined for why they're suing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There was an article in Toronto Star today about this, about the 30% that Apple takes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, apparently developers are complaining about the fact that they call it the Apple tax. I don't know if it's mentioned in this article you've got linked here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, just because people are complaining and just because they sue doesn't mean they'll actually win.
Right.
So the sky has not fallen yet. but it could.
The Apple tax concern for the end user is the concern that 30% that Apple is charging is being couched into the price of the app and then being passed on to the end user, which is going to be hard to prove to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that we just talked about the race to the bottom. I mean, prices have been diving for a long time. And I mean, Apple claims that they get 100,000 weekly submissions for apps. So they have to have a team of people to approve those apps and check them and vet them. And I think we've talked about why Apple charges 30% in the past, and they have dropped it to 15% on year-over-year subscriptions, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Apple claims that they're not the monopoly, that the developers get to set the price, and Apple's just taking 30% to cover costs. I mean, that was what Steve Jobs got up on the stage, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, and said, you know, and from our perspective, it sounded like, hey, this is a great opportunity to make a small income. You know, I mean, some people are able to buy helicopters, but not all of us, right? A very small percentage of us are actually making huge dollars off the App Store selling apps, right? Right.
It seems to me, and I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to me if people are suing over the monopoly aspect, then if they win, it's got nothing to do with the 30%. It means that Apple can no longer force you to only download apps through their own App Store. It means they have to open up phones to other App Stores. Now, the other App Stores could charge less than 30%, sure, but it wouldn't force Apple to cut out the 30%. It means that, you know, anyone and their uncle could have an App Store and load apps onto your phone, which would be a big mess, big disaster. I mean, we'll malware left and right.
Yeah, they compared Google Play to this in the Toronto Star article about the fact that, you know, yeah, Google does allow people to put apps on the App Store, but they also allow people to buy apps from, you know, individual software sellers, right? Like, I guess you'd build your own little store.
Yeah.
And we know that, I mean, notwithstanding Android's success, I mean, it is pretty successful outside of North America, but it does have issues. We've had viruses and exploits and all kinds of stuff on that environment as well, right?
Yeah, and certain apps don't work on certain phones and don't
work on
various versions or whatever.
And concepts like Bitcode, where you're actually compressing down your app into the individual version so that your app isn't downloading every version or every iPhone's technical needs, they can streamline those features to go end-to-end.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll have to see how this plays out. It's kind of an odd one, especially, you know, in light of where apps are going in terms of how they're being sold, you know, mm-hmm. more and more service-based. stuff. All right. What's next, Drew?
So about a year ago, Apple introduced what they referred to as their Pride face. It was basically a six rainbow strings that you could use as a face on your Apple Watch. And this year they are introducing two new ones, or actually three new ones, with watchOS 5.2.1, though you will need to make sure that your iOS is updated to 12.3 to see it. Mm-hmm. Though, interestingly enough, I tried to load it myself and it won't load for me. I may just be because I'm in Canada this week, which always seems to be the excuse of why something doesn't work. But the new faces, a lot of people have complained that they're a little on the busy side, very 1970s, lots of color, lots of very thin lines and concentric circles. When I see them on the actual watch, I'll have a better opinion on them. They look nifty and such, but other than that, the new faces are there. If you have 5.2.1 and 12.3, you should be able to see them in your watch app.
Cool. And last year they had rainbow straps as well, or bands as well, right?
Yeah, those came out at about the time of WWDC, so hoping that those will come out as well.
Well, last year they also had faces for each country, right? Didn't they?
I don't remember about watch faces for each country.
I think they had bands, I think. But maybe not watch faces, right? Yeah. When is gay pride sort of stuff happen in the States?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'm being a very bad ally.
Okay. All right. Well, you have another story here about Apple.
Finally, with the tariffs that are going on between China and the U.S., there's been a lot of concern that what the current tariffs would touch would be Apple's chargers and cases. Mm. Now, at this point, the first set of tariffs, which raised it to about, I believe, 10 or 15%, Apple absorbed those costs and they didn't show up on the price tags.
Right.
And it remains to be seen whether or not that Apple will try to swallow those costs again.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, there are additional tariffs coming. They should be affecting those chargers, those the power blocks, the USB blocks, and the phone cases. So we'll have to see in the short run. But that in itself is also hit some of Apple's stock prices.
So why is that? Is that because of the devices, or like, or where the technology goes in?
I think the market is concerned that it's not going to just be limited to accessories and cases, that it's actually going to hit the actual iPhones and MacBooks and all that, which are all assembled in China. And even though maybe this round of tariffs doesn't affect those, if things escalate, then the next round easily could. And I mean, just imagine a 25% surcharge on every iPhone sold. That's going to hurt a lot.
Right.
Of course, at the same time, Apple hasn't really been commenting about what they've been moving in and out of China. I know that Apple's been moving a lot of stuff as best they can out of the country. So Apple may very quietly say, oh, well, it didn't affect us because we're now manufacturing those things in Taiwan or something.
So let me ask a question. I heard something, a comment by somebody on a news show last week or two weeks ago, that these type of tariffs are kind of silly in a sense because they don't affect China. They affect the people buying the products from China. In other words, Americans.
That's correct. They only indirectly affect China because it's the company. So Apple would pay the tariff when they want to import this device.
Sure.
And then presumably they'll pass that cost on to the user. In theory, they could absorb it, but that will really hurt their bottom line. So probably they'd pass the price on to the user. So in effect, the number of units sold is going to go way down. So that will reduce the amount of trade with China. So it only indirectly affects China. China does not pay the tariffs.
Yeah, it seems kind of ridiculous once I heard that.
The tariffs go in both directions. As one country introduces one set of tariffs, the other country introduces a set of tariffs.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if that affects people, less product is bought, so less profit for China on the products that would be bought from them.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of get the impression they could go, so what? I mean, like, isn't more... Mind you, I guess they have more people in China, so they have more interested in importing products, right?
Well, no, it's the trade imbalances. They export way more to the U.S. than we export to China.
Right.
So if the amount that we import goes down, that affects their economy. That's the concern. So if that's massively impacted, then you know they're losing a lot of money because they can't sell to us.
Right. Now you mentioned earlier that this affects the stock price as well for like Apple and places like
market in general. So Apple's stock price dropped from around 210 before the announcement to it bottomed out at around 183. That's pretty big. It's back up today to about 190, but it was a pretty big drop. Almost a $30 drop in the share price from 210. That's like a 1/7. And the reason is that one of two things will happen. Either Apple will have to absorb the cost of the tariff and that comes off their profit, or they'll have to pass the cost on to the consumer, us.
Which could affect the number of products that they sell.
Exactly. Yeah. So overall, either way, Apple's profits are going to go down. So the stock market sees that and says, if the profits are going down, they're suddenly a less attractive company as an investment. So the stock price goes down.
Even though they're the biggest company in the world currently.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But,
it's been at least 5 minutes since everybody's been screaming that Apple is dying and doomed.
Right. Right.
That's true.
Well, it is true that the stock market tends to overreact. But in this case, it's actually based on something real. I mean, if this continues, it will impact Apple for sure. Let's just hope that this gets resolved sooner than later.
Yeah, I have my doubts on that.
Yeah. Right.
So my story here is I don't know if you want to take a quick look at this one, but I think there's been rumors about Apple coming up with a new type of Mac Pro. And this one's interesting because there's some, and it's speculation as to whether it's a legit story or not, but it shows, a square-based design as opposed to the trash can design we have now, right?
The mini keg. Let's be positive.
Mini keg. That's true. Okay. Mini keg.
Mini keg.
I don't know. I always thought it was a trash can. Yeah. All right. So mini keg. So anyway, this is more like a mini cheese grater, I guess, is kind of how it looks to me, right?
Mm-hmm. Bring back the Apple Cube.
Yeah.
Yeah, not quite. Yeah, it's not quite square, but yeah, I guess, how tall is it? 7? Can you read the numbers on this blurry picture?
No, it's a very blurry picture.
Oh, yeah. No, it actually says it in the article. Oh. The supposed design is for a relatively square Mac Pro measuring 7.7 inches wide, 11.55 inches tall, and 11.55 inches long with rounded vertical edges.
Right.
So there you go. Well, this would be pretty awesome. I mean, we've been waiting for this for a long time. They usually don't announce hardware at WWDC, so it would be sort of an unusual thing, but maybe, people have been waiting long enough and they want
to... Well, that's why this article is sort of implying that it's fake. I mean, it claims to have an Intel Cascade Lake X processor, an Apple T2 security chip, which I think is the same as what's in the new phones, Apple X2 accelerator, DDR5, which I think it says here first commercial releases haven't occurred yet, so they're throwing shade at that one. I think the biggest problem that people have had with the current Mac Pros is that you can't put in a bigger drive. You can't put multiple drives in like you could in previous models, right?
Right. They haven't upgraded it in 10 years. Yeah. Not 10 years, 5 years at least.
But I think the biggest issue with this is the fact that they've got this all laid out in a nice diagram for something that's not released yet. That seems like that's a bit crazy for a leak. That's the kind of stuff that would be under lock key as far as Apple's concerned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the document says last modified 7 November 2018. So that too. Codename Phoenix, the Mac Pro 7.1, who knows?
Rises from the ashes of the little metal ashtray.
True. Well, have to see. It's the first time I'd seen the rumor about the anticipated Mac Pro, but as I said before, a lot of shade been thrown at it as to whether or not this is fake news or not. Mm-hmm. We've just reported on it, so it's news. Whether it's fake or not, it remains to be seen. All right. Well, I guess we're at the picks section of our show, so Drew, do you have a pick?
Well, one of the things is that Apple, which has been teaching different classes to users about how to use the hardware, things like Final Cut Pro or how to use Pages or the like, they've decided to branch into our world, and now they're going to be doing a podcasting class as one of their courses.
Yeah, interesting idea. I don't know if you've been in an app store recently. I spent like a weekend there a couple of weekends ago. And they had in the middle of the store, they had a large, you know, TV, and they had a person there with a microphone on his head, mm-hmm. and he was talking to a table full of people. And it just seemed like a really hard place to, like, you know, considering the noise and the number of people in the store, it seemed to be like a very bad environment for not conducive to teaching anybody anything. And this guy was trying to teach, you know, a Final Cut Pro or something, right? It just seemed odd to me. But I know, like, in the San Francisco store that they closed down that store, or they're actually the one that's up in Union Square now has different levels, so I guess they could go to a quieter level to do a course like this. Mm. I don't know. What do you think about, like, I think I mentioned that our Eaton Center store is a little smaller than the Palo Alto store, but it's the same kind of layout where it's one big giant floor.
We have a flagship store in Pittsburgh, and it's not a very large store, and I've actually attended one of the classes. I think it was a Final Cut Pro or similar type class. I sent my 12-year-old in to do it, and it was pretty much just gathered around one of the tables. There was a monitor, and he had the microphone on his, he had the head microphone, but it was really meant to be a class of no more than 5 to 6 people who could all cluster around the table and work together.
Right.
Admittedly, I think there's only one or two people in the class that day. So they're planning on using GarageBand for the podcast class.
Yeah. It almost, I'm reading the description, it almost looks like it's more of a class on GarageBand, and they're just saying the podcast part of it maybe to get people interested. I'll read the description. It says, have an idea for a podcast? Get started using GarageBand on your phone. In this 30-minute session, you'll learn how to record and edit your voice, add royalty-free music and audio loops, and practice your new skills by creating an intro trailer that you can share with the world. Get hands-on with the latest iPhone in this session or bring your own.
Right.
So it kind of sounds like it's a, you know, introduction to GarageBand.
A lot of their classes have been plugging their own software.
Mm-hmm. Well, Logic Pro is very similar to GarageBand. I wonder if it's made by the same developers, because you, like, a lot of the stuff that I looked at originally talked about starting off in GarageBand and moving over to Logic Pro, and the interfaces are very similar. So I can see that how that becomes, you know, the big boy toy once you get experience on it, right?
I can say for sure it is the same team within Apple that develops both.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, good to know.
Yep.
We won't ask any more than that.
Don't ask me any more than that.
All right. So, what's this next story about Adobe, Drew?
Well, you were mentioning that you're using an older version.
I am.
It turns out that Adobe is now warning users to not use specific older versions of their app because they may get sued for using an old app that is no longer supported by Adobe.
Adobe might get sued, or the users might get sued?
The user might get sued, and not by Adobe, but by a third company.
Huh.
The general belief from the article is that there was licensed software by Dolby back when Adobe was selling it as a per-CD application.
Right.
Once they went to the Creative Cloud subscription method, they wouldn't let Dolby audit, and Dolby said, well, that's it. Anybody who uses those versions, we no longer support, and we can sue them for using software we no longer allow you to use.
Really?
Wow.
That's crazy.
So Adobe is basically being nice to their users and saying, hi, you may not want to use our old versions because Dolby may get angry at you.
Huh. That's a kick in the pants.
Now, if Dolby were smart, they would have a program where you could buy, just for some nominal fee, you can buy a license, and then you can continue using the software, and, you know, Dolby gets paid.
But the problem is that, you know, Dolby only licenses, I guess you'd be buying the license of the Dolby components inside your Adobe
package. Right, exactly.
Well, so, but I'm pretty sure I already bought a license for this software.
You bought the license from Adobe.
Right, who paid Dolby.
Right, but they probably, presumably it was time-based. You know, you bought the rights for a certain amount of time.
And it may also be the subscription versions that did not necessarily have those rights, because there's been how many iterations of some of these software under the Creative Cloud now? Has it been 5?
Well, yeah, let me see what mine is. Mine's Creative Suite 6, right? So yeah, it's a different name. Well, I wonder though, so I thought when you bought the Creative Cloud, you had to be signed in and a, you know, card carrying member of the program to be able to continue using the software. I didn't know if you could use this stuff if you cancel your subscription, right?
It's Adobe Adobe has the line from them is, Adobe recently discontinued certain older versions of Creative Cloud applications. Mm-hmm. Customers using those versions have been notified that they are no longer licensed to use them and were provided guidance on how to upgrade to the latest authorized version.
Right.
So, Tim, if you're using an old version that predates Creative Cloud that you bought outright, then maybe you're okay.
Yeah, that should be fine. It's the Creative Cloud version.
Yeah, I have a couple of friends who sell Creative Cloud. I can probably ask them if they've gotten any explanation about this. But I wasn't aware that you could have use Creative Cloud without an active subscription, right? Which is how I thought it was. Mind you, that's said. I think I have.
But with Creative Cloud, I have a Creative Cloud subscription. With Creative Cloud, you can actually say, well, I don't want to use the current version. I want to use a previous version.
Oh, really? Okay.
The numbers that you have, you don't necessarily have to update.
Oh, so maybe this is sort of a tempest in a teapot, right? This is for people who have chosen to not update to the latest version of Creative Cloud, but still have an active subscription.
Right.
Interesting. Well, I guess there's no mechanism for disabling the app once it's on your machine and you're off on a desert island with no internet access, right? That may be part of it.
Mm-hmm. And the article from Apple Insider talks about the disagreement that occurs between Adobe and Dolby, which is confusing to say the least, and it's not quite entirely clear on what went wrong.
Mark, do you have a pick this week?
I don't.
I have a pick. I have a couple of picks.
My picks don't have a long commute.
Well, my pick is, and you've solved that. My pick is in favor of Mark, right? Because I know you were always lamenting the fact that we never got the air power. My next door neighbor at the office, Derek, bought a hub, basically called Nomad Base Station Wireless Charger Hub in leather. Mm-hmm. It's a 10 watt wireless charger. He's got the reason he bought it is he's got the new AirBuds in the wireless charging case, right? And he's got an iPhone 10 or 10S, I believe. And it's basically wide enough to charge two devices at the same time. There's a picture of it here on Twitter. But it also has a USB out and USB C out. So he plugged his MacBook Pro into it. The USB C outputs 18 watts. So better than the Air Power, you can charge two devices using the wireless charging, and you can charge your Mac Pro with this device as well. Pretty cool. Bad.
Who makes this?
It's made by Nomad.
Nomad.
There's a link to Amazon Canada page, but you can probably find it on the on Amazon.com or UK if you're in the UK listening, grabbing at home. All right. So my next pick is and I mentioned a little bit about it before, was Mark Pavlidis gave a talk at RTACO, which is our Toronto Area Cocoa Heads and Web Objects Users. It's the oldest and largest macOS/iOS user Mac meetup group in Toronto. Mm-hmm.
Out of how many?
I don't know. Lots.
Okay.
But it's the oldest. That's all that matters. Like TACO, TACOW, is actually a lot. If you take the O and the W and transpose them, it's web objects. That's how long it's been around.
Mm.
A lot of Mac developers in this group. And they were telling us the other day, they had the beers afterwards. We were talking about how some of them had first heard about the iOS or iPhone SDK and, jumped on board with that. And now they're happily making iOS apps. Anyway, Mark probably just gave a talk on subscriptions. I'm just going to switch over to my notes here. It was called App Store Subscriptions Condensed Edition. And he basically gave a bit of advice on, why you would choose a subscription model. Who is he and why should he know? He's actually the CTO of Flixel, a company that does cinemagraphs on your iPhone. And they have different tiers of, you can use it for free with watermarked work, or you can pay like a hobbyist version, or you can use a professional version as well. And then plus they also have web services for storing. So they have different levels of subscriptions that you can get. And he went through what you need to know to get started and how to avoid from some pain points. And then, where are we having beers is the last part of his agenda. But what was interesting for me was right at the top when he talked about some facts about subscriptions versus, just regular old, paid apps, right? It's the fastest growing section on, the fastest growing type of app on the App Store is subscriptions. That 80% of the apps on the App Store now are free, which is a little bit up from 67% in 2014. 2013. I don't know where he got these numbers from. I forgot to ask him. But last year, in 2017, they generated $10 billion worth of business, and it's estimated to go to a $75 billion business in 2022. So I thought that was interesting. He said it was good from as a business model. It's good because, you know, it allows you to build customer base over a longer period of time, as opposed to just all at once kind of thing. And, you know, offer trials, have an upgrade path for your subscribers. It also, through the mechanism, allows you to monitor people and offer them there's a promoted subscription on the App Store now. And actually, it's interesting, when you add a promoted subscription to your app page, you kind of occupy the entire page on the phone. So you tend to bump the other apps out of the way that are trying to compete for your space. You can build meaningful relationships with your clients, because now they're buying a product that you're able to support them and build up things and have different tiers in terms of whether they can have like the all-in plan or just the hobbyist plan, as I said before, different kinds of levels. He also gets some advice on transitioning a paid app to subscriptions. Apple's already thought about this, and they've put in an identifier, which looks at, on the iOS, it looks at the build number of your app, and you can say anybody who's got this build number or lower, just treat them as if they bought the app, and anybody above this, put them into the subscription plan. So they've already built in a mechanism so you don't have to try and guess, had this guy paid for it before, and is this a new user using a subscription and that kind of stuff. So really interesting talk from that point of view. Like, I've been, you know, thinking about changing some of my apps over to subscription apps as well, and this sort of gives a really good, clear way of doing it, with some sort of hints and things about some of the pitfalls. I'm not going to go into those today, but some of the things that you might run into in terms of challenges and surprises. Like I mentioned, that on iOS they use the build number, on macOS they use the version number, the App Store version number, to identify which build or which version of the app the user's using. And also, you mentioned something about canceling apps that they don't actually expire immediately. As soon as somebody cancels, they kind of have a 60-day period where they can cancel, which gives you an opportunity to go back and offer incentives to those people who canceled, to let them come back to your app.
So do they ever record these talks?
In fact, they did record this one. And if it gets published, it should be soonish, I would think. Anyway, there was a camera running during the talk, so mm-hmm. I believe that this one will be recorded. I've got the slide deck here, and I've asked Mark if he can put it somewhere so that I can link it for the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing he kind of joked about a few times was he had talked about having this conspicuous disclaimer. There's a lot of times when you're trying to get your app approved through Apple, you want to make sure that you're always advising the client, you know, that who's buying your app, that, you know, there's this, you know, I don't have the verbiage of disclaimer in front of me. Actually, maybe I do. But what's interesting, though, is if you look at the chart that I pasted into the show notes, you can see that, you know, they kind of muddled along, and then they had their big launch, and so they made a good income at launch. This is typical of an app that's on the App Store. It kind of shoots up real quick, and then a little while later, they won an Apple Design Award in 2014. I was at WWDC when they won that. So that sort of made a spike in their sales, and then, you know, Peter running along for a little while, then they kicked up again when they got a feature on the App Store, right?
Mm-hmm.
The red line there on the screen is when they switched over to subscriptions.
Mm-hmm. So there's no absolute scale on here, but for sure things increased.
Yeah, and you can see that. Yeah, you can see that they're slowly bubbling up along over time as they played around with different models. I mean, like, you know, they kind of went into subscriptions early. He also said that Apple's lifted some of the restrictions on how you could do subscriptions in your apps to make it easier and some mechanisms to make it run better. But and he also mentioned as a side note that, well, not quite a side note, but if you run a server that manages your subscriptions, because part of the whole thing, you know, the SK Store Kit, there's the receipt thing that records, you know, when it was last bought and all that kind of stuff, right? He also went through the whole approval process where you submit your subscription, it gets reviewed by Apple, gets approved, you know, or not, right? A couple of tricks on how to launch your app. The subscriptions could take up to 48 hours for them to appear on the store. So even though you might have eager customers on day one, on your day one of launch, you might have to wait a couple of days. So his little trick for that was find a small country, launch it there, let it, you know, run for 48 hours till your subscriptions show up, and then, you know, launch them worldwide kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah, so it was a really good talk. Really enjoyed it.
Well, hopefully it'll get posted online so we can all
Very inspiring. Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. For sure.
So I actually have kind of an inverted pick in some sense this week. I'm going to ask the users out there to do something for me. If anyone out there has any hands-on experience with the new Power Beats Pro headphones, let us know what you think. Post on Ask MTGJC or post on the website and just give us your thoughts. I'm very curious because I'm considering buying a pair because, you know, as I've mentioned many times in the show, I can't wear AirPods. They just don't fit in my ears. So these seem pretty cool. But I want to hear what some people think about it first. So if you've got a pair and you've played with them and listened to them and like them, hate them, neutral, let us know. Let us know what you think.
Right. I did see some tweets actually on people talking about wearing them last week, but I didn't think to send you a link to them, but just, you know, Twitter comments.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, I only can offer an inverse response because I'm wearing the AirPods.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That was your headphone of choice for podcasting?
No, my headphone of choice for podcasting along with my microphone of choice of podcasting are down in Pittsburgh. I was short notice this week.
Oh, okay.
So I grabbed what I had on me and gave it the old college try.
Oh, so you're on the fine Apple AirPods right now?
I am. So if my audio sounds a little different than it normally would, that's because I normally use the Rode Podcaster, and I use a pair of MPOW, the MPOWs, for headphones. They're wireless, and I like them because they actually have an EQ in them, so you can adjust them to your own hearing.
Really? You don't find that there's a lag with them?
No, I actually... I do find there's a little bit of a lag, but then again, when I do my podcast recording, I don't listen to myself. I only listen to the audio from the other people talking.
So I'm monitoring through my headphones.
Yeah, if I monitor through my own headphones, if I listen to my own voice, it throws me, so I just listen to everybody else.
Well, do it for 5 years, you'll get used to it. I actually have I use an analog board beside my computer here, so I hear you guys at the same level that I hear myself. So I always found it hard to talk in a microphone if I can't hear myself talking.
I haven't owned an analog board in probably close to 25 years.
Yeah, I just bought it from Amazon for like $100, and I had to do some monkeying around with the jacks to get it to work. I'm using an old iMic digital analog converter on like, which plugs into the USB port and has an in and out from, you know, Griffin iMic. I don't even think you can buy them anymore. And then I've just got, you know, a couple of phone jack cables running in stereo, and mm-hmm. I'm recording in mono myself, but then I can mix it here on the board. And if I want to do some, you know, Instagram or YouTube guitar playing, I can plug my guitar into one of the channels, and then I can hear myself sing and play my guitar and all that kind of stuff. Plus, it's similar to the rig I use for actual performing as well. And it has USB on it, but I prefer to use the iMac. I find it better. It's my setup. Much more than way more than code podcast.
Yeah, you have an iRig, don't you, for your guitar?
I do. I don't really use it that much.
Yeah, I don't use mine either that much. That's what I was going to ask you, if you ever use it anymore.
No, it's sitting over there on the table. I don't use it much.
Yeah.
But I don't play the electric very often. I usually play the acoustic, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which has a jack, and I just run it through the board. Like, I've got a microphone. I've got a guitar board here on the end of my microphone stand that I just plug mm-hmm. in when I want to do some performing. I thought about, you know, doing some garage bandy kind of stuff on my own as well, mm-hmm. now that I've got the bass and the guitars.
My guitar setup is so much easier. I don't have guitars.
Yeah, you play air guitar, right?
Of course. That's what Hotel California is for.
Yeah, for sure. I just watch the people on YouTube and go, okay, I can't do that. Alrighty. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, if people want to get in touch with you, Mark, how do they do that?
MarkR@smapsoft.com.
Hey, Drew, if people want to get in touch with you?
Drew, D-R-U, drewfreeman.com on the web, or podcastdrew on Twitter.
So until next week, we'll say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've just experienced the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you'll find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the items that we talk about on the show, picks for the episode, as well as links to the apps on the App Store. If you like the podcast, please leave a comment on the website and write a review on iTunes. If you're listening on Overcast, go ahead and press the recommend button. It really helps others find out about the show. You can also follow the show on Twitter at MTJC_podcast. If you'd like to support the show, you can pledge any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening.
Yeah, so 3 weeks till WWDC.
Mm-hmm. 2.5 weeks, yeah.
So what have you decided? Are you going to AltConf, Drew? Are you going to be down there for the Ray Winderlich stuff, right?
Yeah, I have to be down there for doing the live cast. I have to, I'm going to be a little crazy. I haven't actually started planning on any of the other stuff yet. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to go see James Dempsey's show. I don't know if his tickets are sold out yet. Yeah.
Well, I'm maybe performing and I have a ticket. So if I get one for free for performing, then you can have my ticket.
Oh, thank you very kindly.
That'd if that works nice. Out. I don't know.
So.
Yeah, there's a couple of, it's funny, the apps, I was trying to find the party apps and stuff like that. And so there's an app called Parties, I believe. There's not very much stuff being posted yet. Yeah, there's an app called Parties for WWDC, I believe. And there's another one I heard about yesterday, I found out about yesterday, called Comp Friends. And there's some events being listed in there. And of course, James Dempsey's listed on his own thing, right? There's Night of Dim Sum. I don't know if you're into Dim Sum.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm into it. I'm just not into spending $150.
Is that what it was?
Something like that.
$150 for dim sum? That's crazy.
That's crazy. Oh,
I'll take you guys
that's
to dim
Dave,
sum.
That's with Dave DeLong, though. Hey, come on.
I'll take you guys to dim sum for $30.
Seriously. There it is. Conference for WW.
Yeah, the there's two nights of dim sum. One is on June 3rd and the other is on June 6th. And that's for, that's with Dave DeLong.
They say where it's got, where they're going? Needs.
No. You know who Dave DeLong is, right, Mark?
No.
He's the guy behind, who's at Apple? And man, what was he behind? Core ML, maybe? Do you remember, Drew?
Oh, God, no, I don't remember.
So is he actually making the dim sum? That why it's so expensive?
maybe. Hmm. Yeah, he was on. He was one of the guys that introduced this stuff back in at WWDC in one of the thingies. Jaime would know who he was right off the bat. Mm. Where are you when I need you, Jaime?
Not here.
Bad. I could probably ping him and he probably wouldn't know.
Greg Hio will know. He's already posting something.
Yeah.
Even though he hasn't
even published yet, he's posting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's ask on the app here, what did Dave DeLong?
You're typing over on Slack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you see me typing?
It says Timitra is typing.
Well, this will get Jaime and Greg. It's like, MTJC Assemble.
Oh, it's a Din Tai Fung. Okay.
What?
Din Tai Fung is the name of the restaurant.
You found it?
Yep.
How'd you find it?
Din Tai Fung. I googled WWDC dim sum and it came up with the event.
Very clever.
Came up with the Eventbrite invitation.
I never thought about WWDC parties. Let's try that. There's a Twitter account called WWDC parties. Well, this is from the party app, which I already have. Best events to attend. Hmm. Yeah, I got to publish your getting around San Jose that we put out last year, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
I'll republish that episode as a best of.
Yeah, there's like three different podcasts going on, podcast parties.
Which ones? I've got Accidental Tech Podcast and
Relay FM.
Oh, is another one on there?
Wednesday.
Oh, and there's Automators Meetup as well, right? And lots of runs. Oops. Lots of runs.
And I just got a warning for my AirPods that they are...
Time's up.
They're getting tired.
Yeah. I scheduled a meetup for MTJC people. I haven't decided where we're going to do it yet. For June 5th at 5 p.m.
Cool.
So, yeah. We did one last year where people got to meet Greg and Mark.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you're around that week. T-shirts. You're working that week, right?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes. So 5 p.m. is probably too early for me. But depends how late it goes.
Right. Yep. All right. Well, yeah. We'll just,
I'm gonna stop my record.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.